Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
Hello everybody, welcome along. It's another edition of the Cricket Badger podcast, the County Cricket Weekly, and we go to the dark side today. As a Yorkshireman, I'm going to the dark side. I actually have two Lancastrians on the screen in front of me, and first of all, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Cricket Badger podcast Stephen Croft, Lancashire All-Rounder. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Alongside Crofty on the podcast today, it's Lancashire fan Mark Hilton. Mark, how are you?
Really good. I'm enjoying this weather. I know a lot of people are moaning, but I love it. So enjoying the weather. Really good to see Lancs do well in the championship last week, finish top of the group. And then those two back-to-back games in the T20 Blast. It's been a great week for us. Good to see Crofty there, kind of getting his home on one leg on Saturday. And it's great to see three Lancashire players coming through doing well for England in Livingston, Mahmood and Parkinson. So all good with me, James.
Well, we'll talk about those three English Lancastrians, because they've all done well, haven't they, over the last few days with England. That Livingston six at Headingley is probably the biggest six I have ever seen, certainly at that ground. Anyway, we'll talk a bit about that as we go through. We're going to have Nakul Pandey hopefully joining us as well. We're recording this one early, Mr. Croft, aren't we? Because you've rearranged us, and we're now 8 o'clock in the morning doing this podcast. I don't usually speak before 9 o'clock, so we've done very well to all be on the screens together. As Mark was suggesting there, it's been a good couple of weeks for Lancashire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been really good. Obviously mentioned qualifying for the 4-day group, getting that Division One, which is a great achievement, which what we did to set out as well. Obviously taking some points off Yorkshire as well, which we take half of them into the next stage. And the T20s as well, that's a big goal to get into the quarterfinals. Sometimes it doesn't matter how you do, you just got to get into those quarters. And to be fair, we made it hard for ourselves. We need to ideally win those last three in a row, which we did. So yeah, we're in a good spot cricket-wise, really. And yeah, we're missing a few England players as well, which is always great to see them progress and do well. But we've survived without them as well, which is a good thing.
Yeah, you were involved in the controversy, if that's the right phrase, in the game against Yorkshire, weren't you? When the ball went out, I think it was Rooty picked the ball up. You ended up in a heap in the middle, and Rooty decided to hold on to the ball rather than run you out. I know there was a lot of difference of opinion. I think Mark's got a different opinion to me on what should have happened in that situation. But I think Rooty did exactly the right thing in that kind of situation. You basically do the sporting thing and let the guy recover and get back. Is that how you saw it, or did you expect to be run out in that situation?
I didn't see much of it, to be fair. But but looking back, yeah, to be fair, if I was given out, I probably wouldn't have moaned, to be fair. But I think that's what differentiates cricket to quite a lot of other sports, really. We talk about the spirit of cricket. I sort of stumbled in the middle of the field, got cramp and sort of knee lock in the middle of the pitch. I didn't know much about it, to be fair. And then when I sort of got to my feet, he decides it's going to be a dead ball and not to run me out and play in Yorkshire. I don't know what I expected, really. To be fair, I was just glad to get back on my feet. And when they say it was a dead ball, I thought it was a great show of sportsmanship from Joe and the players, really. So I think, like I said, it does separate our sport. And I think we do sort of set some good standards in terms of the spirit of the game and sort of language and the way we address officials does set us apart from other sports.
Knuckles joined us now. We'll come to him for his 20 press-ups in just a few seconds' time. But Mark, I know your opinions were different to mine on that Crofty cramp situation there. You thought Rooty should have basically thrown down the stumps and the umpire should have decided.
Well, I would have run Stephen out, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the umpires are in control of the game. I don't think players should be making those decisions in a kind of snap judgment. I mean, for example, they could have run Stephen out and the umpires could have then asked Yorkshire to withdraw the appeal if they felt that he was incapacitated in some respect. So I prefer to see the umpires controlling the game. You know, there's not much on it for Yorkshire. They'd already got a home side. It'd be interesting to see if they'd have done that in the semi-finals at Edgbaston. And I'd also be interested to hear what Andrew Gale said after the game, because I think there was three young players involved, Thompson, Duke and somebody else. And, you know, I think Gale might have been saying, you know, you play to the final whistle scenario. But for me, you let the umpires control the game. And there is a facility for the umpires asking Yorkshire to withdraw the appeal. So, yeah, I'd have run him out and just let the umpires get on with it.
Michael, welcome. Glad you managed to get out of bed in the end. How are you today?
Full of the joys, James, full of the joys.
And what was your opinion on the Croft cramp run out or not? Would you have thrown the stumps down if you'd been Joe Root?
I broadly agree with Mark, to be honest, in that the umpires are there to make those judgments. I thought it was interesting that Stephen said that you wouldn't have had too many complaints if you'd been run out. I do also, the thought had crossed my mind, had Yorkshire needed to win that game to make the quarterfinals, would it have been different? I don't think that, put it this way, I don't think many people would have been complaining or that this would have been such a big incident had Stephen been run out. I think it's become a bigger incident almost because he wasn't. It was a nice thing to see, and I completely, you know, I'm never going to criticise anyone for wanting to do the sporting thing and wanting to give someone a fair shot. I'm a little bit baffled by the strength of feeling that's been around about it. I suppose that's what comes with the territory for a Roses game and a crucial match. But I do think that in general, I do think that the umpires are there to do the umpiring. I think the same thing with walking. You know, it's not unsportsmanlike to stand your ground until the umpire gives you out or not out.
I was going to give you 20 press-ups for being late, but that shirt, you've redeemed yourself. That's a terrific shirt. I'll take a picture of that. We'll stick it on the Twitter feed.
My name is Jacob, and I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
Who knows wins? Put your money where your mates are. There's over 25,000 players and over £1 million already won. The biggest community pot was £31,000, and there's over 12,000 leagues created. Download our free app and play against your friends and family with bragging rights and real money on the line. Who knows wins in a different league.
Getting back to Stephen and the three Englishmen that are currently doing Lancashire wonders for England in the white ball stuff. Start with Saki Mahmood. I've rated him for a long time. I think he's a terrific talent and a terrific bowler. But just this season, he seems to have gone up a level. And he looks at home now in that England shirt. I felt a couple of years ago, maybe when he made his debut, he was obviously a little bit nervous and was finding his way. But now he looks like he belongs at that level.
Yeah, and every credit to him, really. Yeah, he's almost grown into himself, really. And he was sort of, as a young fast bowler, he's had a niggle here and there, but he seems to have now gone from strength to strength in his body, and he's getting that consistent run. And to be fair, we never really saw the best of him, really, because he was usually away with the... He's been involved in England self for a while now, so he had maybe a Lions tour, or he was away in a squad. But I feel the last sort of 2 years, we've had a good sort of run with him. And I think that's benefited him, to be fair, as well, working with the likes of Jimmy and Chappie week in, week out, and getting that consistency as I feel, put him in a great place. And we all know it. You can bowl with good pace. He's got great one-day skills, and he can swing a ball as well, which we've seen in four-day cricket. So I think almost that little good stint in county cricket has put him in good stead, and great to see him convert that into international game.
You mentioned there Jimmy Anderson, Glenn Chappell as two mentors. You don't get much better than that on the county circuit, do you?
No, you don't, to be fair. And Jimmy will speak to the bowlers a lot. He might not speak to the batters, but he gives the young lads a lot as well. And we've also got Graham Onions as a bowling coach as well. So we've got three great people who probably covered all bases in all cricket, to be fair. And he's definitely benefited from that, as have other seamers at our place as well. But as three men to go at, you've got a hell of a lot of knowledge there, to be fair.
Matt Parkinson, who again is somebody I rate quite highly, is initially a white ball leggy, but he's made waves in the red ball as well in the past couple of years. But he was somebody that spent so much time in the bubble with England without actually playing, but now getting the opportunity, which is good to see.
Yeah, it's great to see someone who's come through our academy as Sak has as well. And to be fair, obviously with the bubble stuff with him last year, I presumed it would have been really tough on him. We were all saying just give him a game or send him home. But as England have done in the past, we'll say probably not the distant future, in more sort of distant past, they generally push those leg spinners maybe too soon, where Parky still think he's done his time now. You look at his blast record and his length record. He's comfortable in his own game. He knows what he's doing. And I think that's put him in good stead going into the international game. I don't think he's got fast-tracked too fastly. He's been involved in quite a lot of squads. And I know the winter wasn't ideal how it panned out. But I think looking at the positives, he wasn't rushed. And now, hopefully, he can have a good run in that side.
He looks to be somebody that's actually taken the bubble life and actually made the most of it and actually worked with the coaches and kind of got better as a result of that, if anything. Finally, Liam Livingstone, who has obviously been a seriously talented batsman for some time now. Again, when he first made his debut for England, I felt he looked a little bit like rabbit in the headlights in those white ball games that he played. Was it 2 or 3 years ago now? It seems like a while ago he made his debut, but now he looks like the real deal. And as we mentioned there, that last game at Headingley, that six that went over the new stand, he can hit the ball a long way, can't he, that fella?
Yeah, massively. And the four-day game, we're actually talking about that. Can anyone actually clear that stand? And I reckon nearly all lads deny that can't be done. And as soon as that happened, we're on the group saying he's done it. But every credit to Livy, he's like you said, he's grown since his debut for England. He's been around the world in Big Bash, the PSL. I think he went to the South African League as well. And he's had success there, which is we've seen as well when he's come back to Lancs. He's made him grow as a player and as a character as well. He's probably matured as a cricketer and as a player. And you see him now. I think we all know his talent, what he can do in the blast and even one-day cricket and four-day stuff. And great to see, like the others, him get an opportunity and take it as well, which is a tough side to get in initially, let alone do well. We look at our one day side and the last sort of month, how you've seen, I won't say second string, but the depth we've got is unbelievable, and great to see him succeed in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, going into that England white ball side now, you need to do a Livingstone, don't you? You need to clear stands. You need to make your mark. Otherwise, you will just kind of fall by the wayside. Mark, from as a Lancashire fan perspective, seeing those three go into an England shirt and do as well as they've done, it's a nice thing, isn't it? As a county fan, you obviously want to see your players do well for your county, but it's nice to see them take the step up and show what your county's offering as well.
Yeah, of course it is. And it's a great testament to those three lads. I mean, it's interesting what Stephen was saying about Sajjan. He's had a bit of a run for us over the last couple of years. I think it's also, in terms of that, it's also a testament to the club and the wickets we play on. You know, Sajjan's learned to bowl on good wickets at Old Trafford, where he's had to hone his skills. He's not been bowling on green tops or whatever. You know, he's had to really kind of develop as a player. Same with Matt Parkinson, the type of wickets we play on there. So I think as a club, we do really well in the type of pitches we produce at Old Trafford, but our pathway systems, you know, we've got lots of very good players that come through from league cricket into the academy and make really good first-class cricketers. Not just those three, but you know, the likes of Alex Davis, who's unfortunately leaving us at the end of the season, but a top-class player. You know, obviously, Stephen came through that particular system. You know, we've got Tom Bailey. We've got loads of players who graduate. So the club does really well. There's a as a producer of really fine first-class players, but a conveyor belt as well for England. So it's hats off to the club. It's hats off to those three players. And it's great for a County fan to see those players developing.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger podcast.
Knuckle, I mean, we're obviously talking about England and those three Lancastrians. They've done really well. And as I say, to get into that England setup, to make your mark, you've got to play seriously well, haven't you? Otherwise, you will just become part of this kind of wider squad rather than actually the 11, because there are many very good Whitepool players that England have at their disposal at the moment. But those three Lancashire players have done that, haven't they? They've put themselves in the mix.
They've absolutely put themselves in the shop window, as it were. And I think it would be a genuine surprise if they weren't in the... all three of them in the World T20 squad. Matt Parkinson's made a very good case for England to play both him and Ardo Rashid, which is extremely exciting. Someone worked out it's the first time since the 50s England have played two specialist leg spinners in the same 11 in any format of cricket.
Come on then, Apple, tell us, who were those two?
I cannot remember off the top of my head, but yeah, it's a rarity, and they both bowled magnificently. They're both slightly different. I love watching them both. Sakib Mahmood, I think, always had the pace, but he's got this, I love his little slingy action. I like the slightly sort of lower arm, the Waqar Yunus type thing. And he seems to be a very clever bowler. So in bowling at the death in the first T20, where he recognised the right length to bowl on the two different pitches, which is not easy for a very young man. And I've rarely seen a more thrilling spell than his in the Roses game in the Championship game earlier this season. And Liam Livingston, who all around the world, he's done it in the IPL, he's done it in the PSL, he's done it in Australia. I was quite interested to listen to hear what Paul Collingwood was saying, what he was saying about the work that they've done together, about how he's essentially stopped trying to hit the ball so hard. He's worked on just grooving a swing. Stephen, when you practice your range hitting and you want to clear those boundaries, and Old Trafford is a bigger ground than a lot of grounds in England, how hard is it to not just try and swing for the hills and try and swing so hard that you lose your shape?
Yeah, it's as a batter, that's the battle, really. You think, right, I've got this, and I think that fits with Livy so well. I think we saw early in his career it was quite adamant. He could hit the ball a long way, but I think over this last sort of 24 months, 18 months, it's almost gone to, I wouldn't say proper cricket shots, but like I said, holding that shape and getting more a consistent sort of hit, sort of similar to Joss, really. You never see Joss sort of sky in the air with his head looking sort of skywards. He's always almost got that 70-80% swing and backs himself that if he does get a good connection, he's going to go. I think we all try and play golf a little bit, and we know when you do try and hit that ball hard, it generally doesn't go where you want it to. And if you take a little bit off and just concentrate on that connection, you do get sometimes the result where I think Livy's in that boat. As we saw last week, he can hit the ball absolutely miles, and he's almost, yeah, like you say, he's taken a little bit off, sort of worked on his swing, and it's paying dividends now, because we see him make consistently big scores, and just, if you get a 60, 70, 80 in a T20 as well, it's probably counts as a big score as well. But it's not just a little cameo where he might get one out of the screws. You look at his innings, and he's probably hit more sixes than fours, to be fair, in T20 cricket. But he's such an exciting talent now, and I think he'll only get better and better being involved in that setup now, and he's generally played most of his cricket, his T20 cricket, probably at the top or in the top four. And to see him come in and even do it at five is a great testament to what he's done in the last 2 years, the work he's put in. And he just feels like he's slotted into that tough side and played their way and gone down their route, how they want to play their cricket. And he's almost just sung straight off that hymn sheet and fit right in.
In terms of their personalities, those three, and we'll move on from those three in just a second, get back to Lancashire. But for Liam, as I said, he looked a little bit rabbit in the headlights when he first played for England. He looks more part of that setup now. So does Sak Mahmood. Matt Parkinson looks like he's got a lot of belief. Are they fairly self-assured kind of creatures, or are they? I mean, everybody's different, aren't they? And everybody needs a little bit of confidence behind them. How are they as personalities in that regard?
Yeah, I think they're all different, those three. But I think, From my experience, they've all got inner belief. They all know what they're doing. Livy might come across more outward sometimes, but yeah, he's got such belief. Whoever he's coming up against, he'll always take the positive route. If there's an option there, he'll take the positive one, which is I think what makes him a player he is, and almost like you said, when that international debut, probably didn't have the experience behind him, but still went for that positive option. And I think that's part of his DNA. Now he's playing well consistently, has put him in a great place. Parky as well, he's you speak to him, or I think some people might come across as an outward person. When you see him get a wicket, it's like he's won the lottery, really. But I think that's how much it means to him, really. He's probably made it the hard way, really. I won't say he can't bat at Anfield. He tries his nuts off, to be fair. And in the field, he's not got a rocket arm. He doesn't throw himself around. I won't say he doesn't throw himself. He does try so hard. And I think that's a testament to his character. He never gives in. And similar with Saki, really. I wouldn't say he's a loud person at all, but I think he's quietly confident and knows his own game. When you throw him that ball, I remember when he debuted actually in T20 cricket, and say you're out of your field, and he set it fine. He knew his game inside out from a youngster, really, which was nice to see. And I think that it's the best way to learn, really.
Liam Livingston apparently worked out that this was something that he'd worked out in lockdown or in isolation after the Sri Lanka ping. So I think what has impressed me most about all three of them is, as well as their raw ability, you know, Liam Livingston has an incredible timer of the ball. Saki Mahmood is quick and can move the ball. Matt Parkinson spins the ball, statistically, according to people like Crickviz, further than most other spinners around. But is the how quickly they adapt and how quickly they learn. Parkinson's already bowling a couple of miles an hour quicker and just getting it a little bit flatter. Saki Mahmood, as he said, the TV commentators were talking about him setting his own fields at every stage of the innings, which is great to see. And Liam Livingston working out, even after having a little bit of success, working out, okay, if I do this, it's more likely to be successful. And then seemingly in one net session working it out. It's a great sign. And Liam Livingston has cast serious doubt now on someone like Darwin Milan in terms of their place in the starting 11. Like when Owen Morgan is comparing you to Joss Butler in a post-match press conference, you know you're doing something right.
David Milan is interesting, isn't he? Because he's averaging 50. He's the world number one in the ICC rankings. But he seems to be the one person that every time a new player does something or every time England fail or something like that, he's the one in the spotlight because of the way he plays, I guess. In the early stage of his innings, he goes a little bit slower, doesn't he? But then he prospers off the back of that. He always strikes me as a little bit bizarre that he's the first one in the firing line. Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. Let's move on from those three Lancastrians then. I wanted to have a look a little bit at the 100. I know we're not supposed to mention that word, or those words, on this podcast, because it's not my favourite subject, but it starts this week, this new competition. And Crofty, I was looking at, you did, for the Cricketer, you did a bit of a blog, I think, a few years back when the 100 was first started out. And when it was first announced, I think you described it, you thought it was might be a bit of a joke, because it suddenly sort of like sprung on everybody, including the players almost, as being this new competition. In terms of how you see the cricketing landscape now, how do you think this new competition sort of fits into it? And are you confident it's going to be a success? Are there any worries there?
I think as a competition, it's probably, well, I wouldn't say it's got the best players in, it's in a few dropouts, but the better players are playing in a different comp, which I can't see it being a failure, to be honest. I would have liked to have seen, I think years ago, more of a franchise with T20 cricket. But I think I was just before me when T20 first came around. I didn't think, speaking to the people, that people thought it wasn't going to stay around and stick, and it's obviously gone from strength to strength. But I think with the players involved and the, I presume the time and the effort that's gone into it, I think it will be a success. sort of I'm not involved and quite a few players aren't, I still think there's, it does feel a little bit separated from the county game. We obviously lose a few players, as do a few other counties, while we're playing the one day trophy. But it does feel a little bit separated. But I think it's one of those we'll have to see how it goes, to be fair.
Mark, your opinions on the 100. I mean, if we try and sort of keep it fairly simple as a discussion, because it's quite complicated, we could talk about this for 3 hours if you wanted to. But in terms of like a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being incredibly worried about the impact of the 100, 1 being you're not worried at all, it's going to be marvellous, where would you put yourself on that scale?
I'd put myself at probably an 8. I am worried about the impact of the 100 generally. I mean, it may well be a success. I've no idea. We don't know yet. We haven't seen it play out, have we? But, you know, when Stephen started, for example, going back to that Lancashire side, then I was thinking about it this morning when I woke up at betting at 5:30 in the morning. But, you know, we had Glen Chapel.
Is this usually your first thought in the morning? You just straight away.
I only think about Glen Chapel and Gary Keady in the morning. So we had Chappie, Keeds and Mal Loy. Yeah. Now, we played a little bit of international cricket, Mal Loy, but they were all top class, multi-format players, first class players, and predominantly first class players. Great, great records in first class cricket, great records in 2020 cricket and one day cricket, all three of them. And it worries me, you know, looking at England's one day side, we can pick two or three sides. It worries me we're losing that quality, that multi-format quality, those real top quality players. I don't know where it's going. If I look in my crystal ball in 10 years, do I see a lot of top quality red ball players? I'm not sure. I don't know. I see a lot of quality white ball players. With those top quality multi-format players, Loy, Chappell, Keeder, who were all great players when you started, Stephen, they're disappearing. And that worries me a lot about what the impact of the 100 could have long-term on cricket and red ball cricket. Whether it'll be a success or not, who knows? But it does worry me about the disconnect, as Stephen said, about from the county game.
It's one of those that I don't know, let's say, how it's going to pan out, to be fair, but it was a while ago, obviously, England wanted to have a white ball portion. And to be fair, we won the World Cup and gone from strength to strength. Like we just spoke about the last sort of 30 minutes about the strength and depth we've got as a country, really, in the sides we can put out. But yeah, I think has our red ball form dipped because of that? It may have done. But it's one of those we'll have to see. Yeah, I hate to sort of to lose those sort of traditional red ball players. We've seen the likes of Joss as well, who's still a Lancs player, by the way, who gets overlooked by that. But he sort of made that transition through white ball cricket, which I wouldn't say is a modern thing, but still had success doing that. I don't think that fits for everyone. I think you still need to almost still like the white ball. Do your time, get your experience in the county game. But I presume if that window's getting smaller and smaller in county cricket, it's tough to get that experience in, really, I suppose.
Nakul, going back to the points about the 100 and how worried you are in terms of its impact on the domestic / national setup in England. So are you concerned or are you happy that this new competition's coming in?
I'm going to put myself as a 5 on that scale purely because there are so many questions that you just can't answer. Not even after the first season, probably after the second season or more of the 100, because there's just, it is impossible to truly assess the scale of it before it's happened. I think there have been some, it's taken a while to get some writing and some journalism on it that didn't fall squarely into either camp, but we've seen some good stuff recently. I'd urge all of the listeners to this to check out Ebony Rentford Brent in The Guardian. Who is positive about its potential impact, but is very much aware of the fallbacks, and also makes the point that Stephen made, which I would firmly agree with, and I think a lot of the complaints about it wouldn't be so vociferous if it were a T20 competition rather than a brand new format of cricket. I think that's fair, and I think it's something that England, whether it was a revamped and better marketed and better promoted blast or a franchise T20 tournament, England probably did need a T20 tournament that can, if not pushing the IPL, then at least stand with the CPL and the PSL and the Big Bash. I think that is probably the case with the concentration of talent and the concentration of resources and the proper dedicated marketing. There are some laudable aims that the 100 has. Whether it's the best way to achieve them, I have my doubts. And we've seen Izzy Westbury wrote a fantastic piece in The Telegraph yesterday talking about the fact that this hasn't yet been the springboard for women's cricketers that it should have been. There are a lot of women cricketers in there. There are a lot of cricketers in there who are still part-time and are not being adequately compensated for taking their time off work, which is something that the... And then we hear that they try to essentially pay the Australian players, Meg Lanning and Elise Perry and so forth, extra to stay. So there are a lot of these issues around the edges, and there are a lot of issues with the implementation. And I think the way that it's divided the cricket fan base is a real shame, and it needn't have happened that way. You put enough good cricketers in on the field at the same time, and they're going to produce some good cricket. That's not really in doubt, and it'll be better obviously once COVID has allowed the really top players to stop having to choose quite so much between different types of cricket. I did an 11 of the players who've pulled out, and the middle order is Glenn Maxwell, Kyron Pollard, Andre Russell, which is not bad. Which is pretty frightening when you think about it. Like Aaron Finch couldn't get into the 11, put it that way. There are some significant concerns, but I don't necessarily think that it suddenly spells the death knell for multi-format and first-class cricketers. The best players, the most ambitious players, are always going to want to succeed across formats, and they will find a way of doing it. And those who find themselves having to specialise will become better at their specialisations. It may even be better for an opening batter who has a slightly limited game to concentrate more on red ball cricket and become a specialist. You look at the current England team, Rory Burns and Dom Sibley play some limited overs cricket, but not that much. They don't have serious ambitions to play for England. Haseeb Hameed, who Stephen, you'll know well, has played some white ball cricket, but is not a serious contender to play for England in white ball cricket. Has got back into the side based on championship runs this season for Notts, and they all play in a very specific way. What you might see is more divergence in the formats and more divergence in the demands of the formats, but the best players are always going to want to succeed in every format possible, and they'll do the work and find a way.
I set up a pose the 100, which two or three years ago, whenever it was, handed that on to somebody else now, because I kind of got bored of just being negative all the time about cricket, and I just felt like I was just all the time just picking holes in it. But I am very concerned about the new competition. As Knuckle says, you put the best players on the pitch, I'm sure I'll watch some of the games and it'll be entertaining stuff. It feels like the ECB have taken cricket, stuck it all on red, spun the wheel, and let's see where we take it now. And the financial implications of that on how much has been spent on this is quite drastic. To me, it's a bit of a lose-lose, because you get an all-flourishing, the 100 competition. Ultimately, that ends up being the cherry on top of the cake, and county cricket goes down a notch because of that. If this 100 fails, you've basically, the wheel's spun and it's come up on black and you've lost a lot of money off it. And
I think the fact that it is too big to fail, seemingly at this point, and I think a lot of that, to be fair, has to do with COVID, which was less foreseeable.
Yeah, the only thing with that, Knuckle, is I went to, when I used to work for Yorkshire, I went to ECB meetings, and they used to make a big thing at the ECB that they had a war chest. They had these reserves that basically, if a tour was called off, if there was a war, they never mentioned the word pandemic, but that would have been part of the same thing, that there was this money in reserve that was at the ECB HQ to kind of get cricket out of rainy days. But we've had torrential rain, haven't we, over the last 18 months? And they've spent all of that money on marketing the 100. And that, to me, was a little bit reckless.
Again, I'm 50-50 on that. I think you should promote new tournaments. I would like to see this level of marketing and enthusiastic marketing about all cricket.
Exactly.
I think that just because you've done the wrong thing previously doesn't mean you have to keep doing the wrong thing.
And I read Ebony's piece, and a lot of the stuff about inclusivity and all of that kind of stuff. Get cricket, county cricket, encourage that to be inclusive as well. It doesn't have to be a new competition that makes things inclusive. Mark's waving his bum. Mark, tell me what you think. You've been marking out your long run. I can see it.
Not really. I think the 100 is going to be... I've got my doubts about it. I think just picking up on a couple of Knuckle's points, participation rates, I very much doubt that the 100 is going to increase participation rates, generally speaking. I think what James was saying there about the role of county clubs and their importance in engaging with communities is far more important. I take our club Lancashire. We've got lots of players that come through league cricket that go to state schools. Most of our players have been to state schools. We have very few privately educated cricketers in our staff. The players like Stephen are all affiliated to a club. Keaton Jennings, for example, is affiliated to my club, Haywood. We've got a great kind of networking in terms of his scouting and training and coaching. And I think that grassroots level is far more important than a competition. You know, as I said before in a previous podcast, you know, I work in education with kind of people from 16 to 50-year-olds, really. I've got a whole range of people. But when I ask 16 to 18-year-olds about whether the 100 is going to make them play cricket, they don't even know what it is. So I'm not really sure about that. And just the second point as well, you know, Knackle talks about players will always find a way, and that's true to a large degree. But there, if you look statistically, there are less and less of those players, and those players that are finding a way, as Stephen said, like Josh Butler, came through initially on red ball cricket to a large degree. Now, if you look at the stats, we're having a polarisation of specialists in red and white ball, and I think that eventually it'll become far more stark, and that's dangerous for the game, I think.
Let's move on from the 100. I don't want this to be a podcast all about the 100. We've got Stephen Croft on, for goodness sake. We need to ask him some questions. And Crofty, the guest last week was Roman Walker, Glamorgan bowler. And his task at the end of that was to leave you with a couple of questions, which he did. And the first one of those was, if you could have three wishes, what would they be? And they could be cricket wishes. They could be life in general. It could be the genie out of the lamp. And he's given you three wishes. How are you going to use them?
Well, let's keep it cricket themed. I'd like to sort of play all year round in this country. I think obviously a lot of the problems come with squeezing everything in multi formats, and yes, not ideal playing when it's frosty in the mornings and stuff like that. So it'd be nice to play in a nice climate all year round. I know some of the younger lads go away and chase the sun in the winter, but yeah, as cricketers, it'd be nice to sort of play all year round. The indoor centre can get pretty grim, especially when you've done it for nearly 20 years. So, yeah, I think playing all year round would be very nice.
So your wish number one is for the sunshine to be around in January and December as well?
Yeah. So we can get out of that indoor school and get me out of running, to be fair. But, yeah, cricket would be nice all year round.
That's one wish. What are your other two wishes?
You stuck it on me there. In things in general, I like to see people being happy and that's not just a cricket thing, but try and take in the positive route, whether it be cricket or life, really, where try and help someone out. So, yeah, I think if we got to a place where most people could be happy or hit a common ground with most people, I know it's with cricket fans, it's probably hard. Yeah, it's to see people's smiles on faces is always nice, to see people positive. And I think another wish would, I think if this COVID thing went away, I think we all realise how, I wouldn't say precious life was, but we're hopefully seeing the back end of it now and how lucky we were before all this pandemic and not walking around with masks on and things like that, having a panic attack if you got your keys, wallet and mask. But yeah, I think to how life was before this pandemic, I think it's obviously been tough for quite a few people, well, a lot of people really, and how sort of fragile life can be and to get back to where we were. So, and like I said, hopefully we're getting on that sort of straight and narrow. It might take a bit of a while, but yeah, sort of how things were, I think we all take it for granted a little.
The other question that Roman left for you was, if you could change one thing about cricket, what would you change?
Longer tea time. To be fair, I love the game and how it is, to be fair. I think county cricket has been great over since the time I've been involved, produced a lot of good cricketers. So I think going back to that 100 subject, I think to get that exposure in all comps, really, the county championship, the one day as T20s and the 100, to promote our game as a whole, really, not just the 100. About to start the one day comp this year today, actually, with a friendly. And to be fair, not heard much around it, really. And it's probably the first comp we've played the first one day cup we've played since our World Cup win, really. So yeah, to get that exposure on all formats, really. I think growing up, you'll get the odd one who really specialise in one or the other, but yeah, to put all our energy in the game as a whole would be great. We saw the impacts of the Ashes 05 and the World Cup win in 2019, how good that was for the game. And yeah, I think to put that on cricket as a whole would be great.
Knackle, I know you've got some questions for Stephen Croft.
Again, moving to red ball cricket, there's a county select 11 that's playing a tour game up in India, up in Durham. I noticed there's a young academy player from Lancashire, Tom Aspinwall, who's going to be playing in that game, potentially making his first class first class debut against a nearly full strength India team. What can you tell us about Tom?
Yeah, he's a great talent, Tom, and to be fair, it does remind me of a sort of younger self, really. When I first started, I was a sort of all rounder, seam bowling all round. Obviously, changed a little bit, but he's quite raw. He's got a bit of pace about him, and with the bat, he lines up really well. Doing some work with him in the academy this winter, another producer, sort of Lancs Academy, and he's. Hopefully, if he gets the nod, I think he'll take it in his stride. He's a confident lad, strong lad. Hits the ball hard, bowls it hard. And I think he's a really good talent. So yeah, hopefully he gets the nod and we can see him. He's I think this year's probably had his first exposure to second team cricket, and he's putting some good performance with bat and ball. So he's a really exciting prospect.
A wonderful opportunity to make your first class debut against this India team. I'm sure we'll have plenty of stories. First class, which is Pateshwar Pujara.
He's one of those. He probably won't know who most of them are. To be fair, he's sort of relaxed in that way. He cut his own hair in lockdown, sort of that sort of character. But yeah, if he does get the nod, he'll try his heart out and he'll give it his all.
Mark, you got any questions for Stephen?
Yeah, a couple of questions. The first one, the most important one, actually, Stephen. Are we going to emulate our famous kind of cousins across the other Old Trafford this season and win the treble? Because we're well placed in the Championship. Yeah, 2020, we're there. And, you know, this one-day stuff, we're there. And there's another reason that you and the lads need to take this seriously, yeah? So I've had a bet on us at 10-1. I've put £100 on us at 10-1. To win the Championship at the start of the season. £100 on us at 11-1 last week to win the one-day blast before we went through. I promised my daughter driving lessons. I promised my wife a new kitchen if this comes in. So are you gonna deliver the goods, mate, and win those two competitions?
Are you sure you want us to win with all those promises?
Oh, I want you to. I'll be in the doghouse if you don't. So.
Well, yeah, I think we're in a great position to be fair, like qualified for the blast and in that division, first division for the county championship. Obviously, it's been rejigged and we could win the quad as well. There's a Bob Willis as well up for grabs. Me, Dane, and Tom Bailey were speaking last night. To be fair, but to get halfway through the season and still be involved in every comp is where we want to be at as a club. But yeah, it's getting to the crunch time now. Every game does count. So hopefully, yeah, we don't want to curse it, but yeah, to get any silverware is probably deemed to be a success. So yeah, we obviously want to win every game we can, really, but we put ourselves in the driving seat in all comps.
And just another related question, going back to the cricket and what we were talking about our players coming through, and you know, people like, you know, Mahmood is a multi-format player, so is Parker, he's a multi-format player, and even Livingston when he came back in the side. Actually, we thought at the time the coaches thought he was going to be a better red ball player than white ball player because of his technique. Do you think the kind of, you know, the environment that we foster at the club in terms of our coaching and also, you know, the wickets we play on helps us to develop those better multi-format players? Because I've seen a lot of cricket over the last 6 years played on terrible wickets, like, for example, 2018 at Taunton, when you got a 50, which was probably worth 150 when we got relegated. I mean, that game was over in a day and a half, and uneven bounce for the seamers, turning square, it was a really poor wicket. So do you think the wickets and the kind of culture we produce at the club in terms of what our expectations are helping to produce those really high-quality multi-format players?
Yeah, definitely. And going back to sort of winter stuff, we always prep as red ball probably as our first and priority, really, as well as a staff. I think we're all capable to switch to white ball quite easy, but like you said, I think we're blessed in Old Trafford is a great facility and generally the one of the best wickets in the county scene, really. But yeah, you'd hope that when counties prepare wickets, it's for the good of the game rather than a quick sort of get this win this week. You want to play on the best wickets and produce those players that are going to benefit for the next sort of 10-15 years, really. You don't just want that sort of quick fix, gamble on a win, where I think Old Trafford, we've set the precedent as it, and wickets, sometimes he might be a little docile if you get a bit of weather around, I suppose. But that's the sort of climate and country we live in. But yeah, when you go around the ground, sometimes you think, well, it's not a great wicket, and you want to try and play on the best and emulate those wickets. You're going to get that next level up, really. Because I feel county cricket is a great market, but also I think you're there to produce good players to go on to England, which like we spoke about, Lancs have done and many other counties have done as well. You see the likes of Surrey as well, their sort of academy line from progression to academy to first team to England, and no doubt about it, their facilities obviously are great as well, indoors, and the net facilities, the wickets they play on, it's producing those quality players.
I saw you get your big breakthrough when you hit that six against Leicestershire in the 2020, all those years ago. I was looking at pictures of your body then, not your body then compared to now, and it's completely transformed. You know, you look like a middleweight boxer now.
What are you doing in your own time, Mark? You should stay off the podcast, really. But
so you know that kind of you obviously worked on your kind of physique in the last 16 years because you look unrecognisable than 16 years ago.
Bold scene back then, so I had to sort of be a bit snappy, but yeah, to be fair, the last 15-16 years, yeah, I do like my qualified personal trainer, done a bit of that, and like working out, and I don't know how long I've lasted as a seam. I've got, as you probably saw the height, I've got some dodgy knees, so yeah, I think it probably helped me giving up seam and turn into spin. But yeah, to be fair, at Lancs as well, we've got great facilities. We've got the support staff and ice baths, and got a swimming pool and underneath the changing room, and our own gym. We're quite lucky in that sense. We get looked after really well, and it's all on a plate for you, really. And it's up to you to go in there and get your work done. And we spoke about those three Lancs lads. They've done sort of similar as well, and really looked after themselves, and a bit heavier in other places as well, probably. I don't want to be than 15 years ago, but I suppose that's your stage.
If Lancashire win all of these trophies, I know where me and Knackle are coming. There's going to be some beers on Mark, I think, if he's got a rather increased bank balance. If those
Chris and that new kitchen. Stephen, you had a long career and a good career and achieved a lot in the game. What one cricketing ambition would you like to see fulfilled between now and the end of your career?
To win another trophy, obviously, you want to play for England at the highest level, but I think that ship sailed, to be honest. But I don't think you can never say never, but yeah, to win a major trophy would sort of top it off, really, having done the county championship in the T20 with a bunch of local lads on both occasions, and the squad feels like that at the minute as well. I think having a testimonial, I think it was 2018. It was a good sort of career check for me, really. Having at that time, think I've actually played quite a bit and quite happy with what I've done. And from then on, sort of took every game as it might be the last, it might be the last season, it might be the last game, and just go back to really enjoying that game. So yeah, I've not sort of looked too distant in the future cricketing wise, but take every game as it comes. But to get another major trophy would be brilliant at this stage of my career, and obviously with the lads, the way they're developing, would be great to get a trophy in their career as well.
And beyond the end of your career, coaching?
Yeah, hopefully. I've done complete my level four now, and been working with our academy for sort of last 5 or 6 winters as well. So yeah, so a transition into coaching is probably likely. Yeah, Lancs is somewhere I know well, and obviously been a second home for years. But yeah, even if it was a different environment, it would be an eye up to see how other people do it. But yeah, it's hopefully that's the route I'd like to go down and hopefully succeed in. But yeah, I've had a great sort of journey, career. Feel like I've got some good experiences through it, and hopefully it'd be nice to help some other lads along the way as well.
Final question for me before we let you go and enjoy your cricket today at Sedbergh. The Roses rivalry. I mean, I firmly in the Yorkshire side of things, yourself and Mark are on the other side. But I kind of get the impression, having worked at the club at Yorkshire and stuff like that, that there is that rivalry and people kind of big it up. But generally speaking, there's quite a good relationship between the Yorkshire and Lancashire off the pitch as well.
Yeah, I think there is. We're obviously similar, obviously northern lads. Yeah, I think we get on quite well, really. Obviously, the T20 stuff is hard to, you go to the Headingley Field and you don't want to feel in front of the Western Terrace, to be fair. And probably they get the same when they come to us. But yeah, they seem similar to us, a bunch of hard working sort of northern lads. We hit on a lot of common themes, and yeah, there is obviously that historical rivalry there. We seem to get on. There's not much hate there, I would say. I wouldn't say it's hyped up a bit, but you never want to lose to Yorkshire at anything, to be fair. But yeah, they seem a decent bunch, a bit tight, if anything, but yeah, fine.
On that note, we will finish this podcast. It's been a pleasure to have you back on, Stephen. Good luck for the rest of the season. I hope those ambitions that you outlined to Knackle all come true, and you have a fantastic end of your career and the end of season, and the transition into coaching goes swimmingly and well for you. So good luck with all of that.
Thanks, gents. Been a pleasure speaking to you all.
And Knackle and the Fan Badger, just a singular today, Knackle and the Fan Badger, Mark, thank you very much. You enjoy your weeks ahead. We haven't got usually, Stephen, we ask the player to leave a question for the guest next week. I'm still working out who the guest next week's going to be, so you get off scot-free in terms of that task. Thanks all for joining me. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will have a podcast next week. We will have a guest next week. Just don't quite know who that's going to be. But join me then. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.